Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders keeping theater alive during the pandemic. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Blair Underwood and Mandy Greenfield about the Williamstown Theater Festival's new audio production of Paradise Blue. Underwood, a familiar face from film and TV shows like L.A. Law and Quantico, is currently up for a Tony Award for his performance in A Soldier's Play on Broadway, and he stars as the central character named Blue in Paradise Blue. Mandy Greenfield is the artistic director of the Williamstown Theater Festival, which produced the world premiere of Dominique Morisseau's play in 2015, and is presenting this new production as part of a season-long partnership with the audio entertainment platform Audible. Both Greenfield and Underwood are in the virtual studio with me to tell us all about it. Hi, Blair and Mandy. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Gordon. Good to be here.
Good. Great to see you, Gordon. Great to hear you, Gordon.
Yes. Before we talk specifically about Paradise Blue, I wonder if we could rewind just a little bit and talk a little bit about some of the backstory for both of you. Blair, you're nominated for a Tony right now for a show that you were in when the pandemic hit. You were about to finish up your run in it, and you had to pause right before those last few performances. I wonder if we could start talking about sort of what your experience was in that play and what it was like to have to end it just a little bit prematurely.
Oh, Gordon, you're very kind. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning. It was A Soldier's Play directed by Kenny Leon and phenomenal cast. David Alan Greer and Jerry O'Connell and just a slew of just phenomenal, just fantastic characters and actors. It was amazing because I love doing theater, first of all. But for Williamstown Theater Festival and Mandy, Broadway's always great fun to do. And we'll talk about Williamstown Theater Festival, which is magical in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, it was such a strange and odd time to work on stage in the theater, you know, when this whole onslaught of COVID happened. And as we all know, Broadway shut down on March 12th. And I think the day before, the NBA had shut down. So, you know, of course, we've been hearing rumblings about this COVID thing coming. It's coming. And, you know, I always like to go out after a show and say hello to, you know, the audience members and sign playbills. And they had shut that down the day before. So that was the precursor. And then they shut down the NBA. And we said, hey, this is pretty serious. And then everything shut down on the 12th. And I just feel very fortunate, Gordon, that we pretty much had completed our run. Right. You know, we had one more show we were able to do. It was the archival performance for the Lincoln Center that was scheduled for Friday, the 13th. So we went on and did it without an audience. Right. And that was our last time doing the play. And we were supposed to close 2 days later on Sunday. So I'm very grateful that we had a chance to do that. And just, breaks my heart. It's one thing if, you know, you have a show coming up and you can't do it. You haven't left home, you haven't prepared. But there are a number of shows that were supposed to open that week that were deep in the throes of rehearsal and previews. And, you know, my heart just breaks for them. But I'm just ready to soon, hopefully, or this year, hopefully in 2021. Mandy, you know more about that on the front lines. Get back to live theater.
Yeah. And Mandy, for you, right around about a year ago now, you were,
I imagine, putting the final touches on a season that would have been live and in person at the Williamstown Theater Festival, summer season. And it was around, you know, I imagine March that you realized that you would have to sort of pivot. And you came up with a sort of innovative deal that you've got with Audible. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about how that all came together.
Sure. You know, there were those weeks in March, as Blair said, you know, as it was just a kind of avalanche of cancellations, right? And shows and things that were meant to open and events and, you know, everything, every day was being canceled. And I don't know if you remember the day that the New York Times published a little tool where if we flattened the curve by wearing masks and being socially distanced, you could see that the elongation of this thing, right, was our destiny. And it was better that way. It was better to elongate and lower the number of illnesses and deaths than it was to sort of continue on pace the way we had been. But on the day they published that tool, I just thought, we can't do this theater season. You know, this was still in the early days of the pandemic where everyone thought, oh, we'll be back in a couple of months, right? Oh, we'll just sit it out for a couple of months and then everything will kind of come roaring back. But that tool told the truth. And I just thought we've got to figure out how to keep these voices heard, how to keep artists working, how to make new work for an audience that's going to need it more than ever before. Because as we all know, you know, theater teaches us who we are and who we can be. It's an art that is, you know, indelibly and essentially about being alive, being human, the complexity of that, the contradiction of it, the hope of it. And so it was really in a one night, my kids' school was canceled. It became very real to me very quickly. I was up. I was very stressed. I couldn't read. I couldn't watch TV, but I could listen. And I realized that was the way forward, right? Because there is something about listening that causes our imaginations and our hearts to be engaged. Because you can only listen. You can't do anything else when you're listening. You can only actually listen. Yeah. And there's something very freeing about it. So yeah, I called Kate Navin at Audible really just a couple of weeks later and said, let's do this. Would you be interested to do it? And almost immediately she said yes.
Mandy, both you and Blair have a history with Paradise Blue specifically. Blair, you were in the world premiere of the play that Mandy, you and Williamstown produced back in 2015. How did each of you get involved with the play at first back then? Let's start with you, Blair. Mandy. Oh.
Oh, I'll Mandy, start. No, go ahead. No, yeah. Mandy, we're ladies first.
I'll start. I mean, I read Dominique Morisseau's play in the fall of 2014. It was one of the first plays that came my way when I became the artistic director. And I just flipped out. I thought, this woman is writing plays that belong in league with the best American writers that we have. And so, in fact, we did it on the main stage, sandwiched in between a world premiere William Inge play and a production of a Eugene O'Neill play. But, you know, when I read it, I also thought this is the kind of play that needs major artists. You know, Dominique's writing is as poetic as it is dramatic. It is as soulful as it is funny. It is as human as it is heartbreaking. And we needed major artists to bring this thing to life. And I sent it to Ruben Santiago Hudson, the director, thinking he's going to laugh at me. He's not going to come to Williamstown. There's no way, no how. And he said yes. And then, of course, he put together, you know, based around his relationships with, you know, Blair Underwood, starting with the great Blair Underwood. And, you know, when we went out to you, Blair, I just thought, you know, these guys are going to laugh me out of town. They're going to think I'm insane. And really, it was truly starting with Blair and then every actor around Blair, everyone said yes immediately. And maybe that's the power of Ruben Santiago Hudson, but maybe it was also the power of this, you know, extraordinary play by this extraordinary writer at an extraordinary moment in time, looking at, you know, Detroit and, you know, a series of decades in its evolution. With such brilliance and such fearlessness, it just had to be done.
So, and Blair, so tell me how the play got to you and what you responded to in it.
Well, I would tell you, as Mandy said, a great part of it was attributed to the relationship of Ruben Santiago Hudson, who's a friend of mine, number one, but it also because of Mandy and the history of Williamstown Theater Festival. I had never been there. And any actor who comes through New York, any actor really, but especially if you come through New York, you know about Williamstown Theater Festival. And I've always wanted to be a part of that. And then thirdly, of course, the writing of Dominique Mauriceau. This was a season of my life where I finished doing a TV show and I was just kind of burnt out on Hollywood and I just wanted to do theater. So I took a year off and just did theater. And I had just done, as Mandy mentioned, some of the greatest playwrights. I just done Othello with Barry Edelstein, so Shakespeare, and A Streetcar Named Desire, Tennessee Williams, and Horton Foote, Trip to Bountiful. So I had just finished working with some of the greatest writers on the planet ever. And Ruben called me and said, this writer, Dominique Mauriceau, you have to read her work. She's the next great thing. So just based on that, and I read it, and I felt, I heard the rhythms of an August Wilson, of a Lorraine Hansberry, of a Horton Foote, but the specificity of the people and the characters of Detroit, because she is from Detroit, she is Detroit. It was all right there. And that's what makes these great writers so great, because it's the specifics of who these people are in these times. And so I couldn't jump fast enough. I had time where I could do it. And I told Ruben I very much wanted to do it. So I take my hat off to Mandy for seeing the value and seeing what makes sense. And then, and Ruben and Dominique's words and script.
And what do each of you remember about that production in terms of what it was like to work on and what you felt like you really achieved with it? And maybe were there things that you wanted to revisit in the work or in the character you played or something like that?
Well, for me, I mean, you know, how it landed in this Audible season had everything to do with the, you know, at the Williamstown Theater Festival, we make work very fast under, you know, intense circumstances. And you sort of begin to see what the play and the production is going to be toward the end of the run, really. Yeah. Right?
Hey, sorry, because Mandy, can we just clarify how long is the rehearsal period? It's something absurdly short, right?
The rehearsal period is less absurdly short. The rehearsal period is 3.5 or 4 weeks.
Oh, okay.
The tech period is absurdly short.
Got it.
It's like a minute and a half. And then, you know, the run is pretty short.
Right.
And you know, it's sort of the run is 3 weeks, which is an ordinary preview period in New York.
Yeah.
And toward the end of, you know, the run, you really begin to see the actors sink in, the performances really deepen. I mean, you really begin to see. But in the case of Paradise Blue, also the degree to which music is and was and kind of revealed itself to be a sixth character in the play, if you will, which is, I think, what stuck with me, right? When we had the opportunity to think about what else could go into this Audible season, the degree to which music is also, you know, a real piece of the storytelling here felt like such an obvious candidate for, you know, an audio format. So I was thrilled when you know, everyone that, you know, was involved in that original production just said, yes, let's do this. And of course, you know, the opportunity to bring Dominique both as a writer and an artist and a storyteller to a global stage really felt like a necessary moment and opportunity.
Yeah. And Blair, for you, what was the experience of doing the show first in Williamstown like for you?
Well, when I said magical before, I meant that because Williamstown, for those who haven't been there, it's in the Berkshire Mountains. It's this idyllic town and it's like small town America. And I loved it. And I remember what was said to me years ago, it's kind of like summer camp for actors. Mm-hmm. But it's intense. I mean, you're working all day long. And at night you kind of go home and relax, but it's just a beautiful, wonderful place. But it's all about the work, and people are there to do a job, and it's intense, but amazing all at the same time. So that whole experience was phenomenal for us. I mean, it's rare when you have a group of people, a cast and a crew that just, number one, get along. Number two, have respect, mutual respect for each other, and number three, within that respect, challenge each other to do our best work. And that's what we found. That was certainly my experience with Paradise Blue. And there's also that other layer and element that's special because it was a world premiere. It was the first time it had ever been produced. So that just adds another layer and aspect of challenge, but also of really liberation.
And what for
you? I was hungry for that. I mean, the three projects I told you about I had just done, they had all been done before, especially Streetcar Named Desire and The Shadow of Marlon Brando. So, you know, it was so nice to really be liberated from all of that and have a chance and opportunity to create something new for the very first time and put our stamp on it as an ensemble.
And what interested you personally or professionally about returning to it right now and thinking about that character, returning to that, getting to revisit it again?
Mandy knows I've been trying to return to that character for since I left it. I mean, I really, you know, when we did it in at the Signature Theater in New York, I was supposed to do it and I was unable to because of scheduling problems, and still very much would like to bring it to Broadway one day and put it on film another day. It's one of those characters because Blue, we said specifically,
yeah,
Blue, who runs, who's the head of this band, this jazz quartet in Black Bottom Detroit in the 1940s. He's very troubled. And I tend to, I don't know why, I'm just drawn to troubled characters, tormented characters. Mm-hmm. but really the complexities and the contradictions, as Mandy mentioned, that are all within this world of all of these five characters, including the music, I found so compelling and intriguing, and so much more to explore. You know, it was interesting. I did see the preview in New York after I finished the job. I did it and came back, and it was so amazing to have created this character and watched and been a part of this production, and then have some distance on it, be divorced from it, and watch it with fresh eyes. So all of a sudden, and my God. I think the brother who played my role is my man. J. Alphonse Nicholson. Yes, J. Alphonse Nicholson, my boy, who was amazing. He was amazing in the role. But just because there's distance on it, for the first time, I had new ideas of how to approach the role. So, yeah, hopefully we'll get back to it in another way. And we did that with this audible presentation. I was able to kind of just try different things that I hadn't tried before on stage. Yeah. And that in and of itself is what's so wonderful about the theater. You always have the opportunity to come back and do it again night after night. And in this case, a few years later.
Yeah. And you are not the only actor returning to this play. Mandy, what was the sort of thinking behind the kind of casting of this in terms of, you know, going with people who had done it before versus, you know, a new set of actors?
Well, here's what you learn when you work with Dominique Morisseau and Ruben Santiago Hudson and Blair Underwood. It's a family, and that family's not going to break up. You know, this company came back together, although for Audible, joined by Simone Lissick, who wasn't in the original production. But they came back together in 2020, fall of 2020, to record Paradise Blue, having not really done this show together for some number of years. But, you know, it was like nobody had been apart. I mean, it was like conversations picked up in media res. It was just watching people come back together to their family. And, you know, I think also because, you know, it does take a certain kind of actor. You know, we talk about, you know, there are certain Terrence McNally actors. There are certain, you know, there are certain actors who, you know, you know what the work requires.
I'll have more with Blair and Mandy.
There are Dominique Morisseau actors, and there are Ruben Santiago Hudson actors. And when you find them, you hold on, and they are family. So I don't really feel like we chose. I felt like the actors chose it, you know, and the material is so indelibly fused to what everyone has brought to the material, heart, soul, skill, investment. It's really beautiful to watch everyone come back together again.
I'll have more with Blair and Mandy right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
And now, here's more with Blair Underwood and Mandy Greenfield. Let's talk a little bit about the actual process. I'm guessing none of you were ever in the same room as throughout this rehearsal and recording.
Yes. So, you know, when we, the original pivot to Audible did assume that at some point in the summer of 2020, we would be able to be in a studio together and look each other in the face and record. And it was probably in about June of 2020 where we realized, nope, that's not going to happen. So there was a kind of second pivot to this completely remote way of working, which Blair, maybe you want to talk a little bit about that experience.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I laugh when you bring that up because I literally was in my wife's closet surrounded by clothes and shoes galore, recording the production for 3 days, I think, two or three days it took. But no, it was amazing. And Audible was great because so much of what we do now is Zoom or what we're on right now, Squadcast. But in this case, they sent the equipment to us. So it was very high-end professional microphones and a separate computer. And we set those up wherever we were. And some people had studios in their house. I never did. I'm in the closet. And, you know, we all had different types of setups. But at least we had the equipment to keep it equal.
And was there a rehearsal period or... How did it look like a sort of traditional you know theater run in terms of rehearsal and teching?
Go ahead, Mandy.
For the world premiere work in the Audible season, there was a full week and a half of rehearsal before recording. For Paradise Blue, it was a little bit truncated because, you know, these actors had found the work prior, really. But Blair, I don't know if you want to just talk about the process a bit.
Well, yeah, I think we had a week or a few days, four, five, 6 days allotted. It turned out, I think we did two strong days for many hours. I don't remember exactly what it was, but we were kind of there. I mean, like Mandy said, it is a family. Simone Missick, as you mentioned, was new, but because she had done the role in New York, she was very familiar with the material. Right. But those rhythms we just picked up right away, and it was just like getting the band back together with the new lead singer and the female lead singer. But that was it. I mean, really, and also it was interesting to just focus on the audio. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us really, you know, all of us do voiceovers, so we know it is a different muscle that you use. So I found myself turning the lights off in my wife's closet and just focusing on what I'm hearing and kind of giving it back as I heard it as well.
And what did you end up discovering in the character as you were focusing on this, delivering the performance in this one very specific way?
Well, because we were in the fall of 2020 and because we were in the midst, hopefully we're near the end of it, I don't know, but we were in the midst of such loss of life and livelihood and uncertainty. I really wanted to tap into that because I was feeling it, you know, and that's very much what Blue was feeling on steroids. So I just kind of tapped into that vein and opened that vein up and found, you know, I think deeper and different colors and shades than I was able to tap into before.
Right. And you've both mentioned the fact that music plays an important role in this. How did you think about incorporating the music in this new audio form? What could you do maybe with this music that you weren't able to achieve last time? Or how does it fit in differently this time for this production?
Well, I think that the music bears a, you know, huge part of the sort of storytelling delivery system, right? I mean, the emotional trajectory that the audience is taken on and through is really sort of, you know, catapulted and supported by the music in addition to the sound design. We have a brilliant sound designer named Darren West. The music is co-composed by Kenny Rampton and Bill Sims Jr., who sadly passed away not so long ago. But, you know, to have Kenny Rampton playing trumpet on this, you know, unbelievable theater recording and letting that trumpet sound carry an audience. You know, you don't have a set, you don't have costumes, you don't have the other dimensions of live theater. So sound and music really deliver us so much of the experience. And I think the way that Ruben and Darren and Kenny found a way to weave it throughout in this version, you know, it's also interesting in audio because you don't have the visual piece. There are certain other sonic components that change the experience. I don't want to, you know, rob anyone their experience of Paradise Blue, but I hope, you know, the way, you know, the way certain sounds hit your ear cause you to ask questions rather than answer them, I think, in this version, in a way that's really provocative and interesting.
And what, as you were experiencing it, Blair, you know, through recording it, and Mandy listening now to, you know, I don't know if a finalized version has been finalized yet, but at least the version that exists now for you right at the moment, what strikes you about what kind of comes to the fore in the story when you're just focused on the music and the audio and the sound of the language and the story?
The beating heart. The beating heart of every human being, of every character. You know, all of Dominique's plays, like August Wilson, who has a 100-year canon of plays. Dominique, as I mentioned before, is from Detroit. And this sequence of plays are three plays set in Detroit. Each one has to do with people who are affected by ultimate life changes outside of their realm, bigger and larger than them. In the case of Paradise Blue, it's the fact that there's gentrification and there's new governmental leadership, a Mayor Kobo at the time, and they're facing the destruction of the community. Their bar, Paradise Valley itself, with all these bars and companies. So the dealing of that as the characters, we're all feeling that again as we are now in the world in which we live. So to really tap into that and focus from just an audible standpoint, taking the visual away, it forces you to go deeper.
Yeah. Blair, yeah.
I know we all did. Yes.
Yeah. No, I would just, that leads me into my next question, which was, how do you feel this play hits right now, as opposed to, you know, in 2015 when you first did it, in 2018 when they did it at the Signature? What really resonates now with the timing right now, coming out right now?
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? We all have a different prism that we're looking through now with everything in life, and especially because so much of us, myself included, so many of us, you know, we're watching so many movies on all the streaming services, and everything looks and sounds differently. And I think it is just that we see things differently because of the social unrest, specifically about the Black community. People are hearing differently, seeing in a unique way. When the social unrest happened with George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery this last summer and Breonna Taylor, you know, so many of us in the Black community said, this is what we've been talking about. You know, I had so many of my white friends call me and say, is this how it really is? And, you know, let's talk. I want to talk. Conversations with very good friends that we just never had. And I think by the same token, people looking at, and in this case, listening to this Black experience, this very specific African-American Detroit experience of these artists. And I can't remember the exact line offhand, but there's a line that one of the characters says, to be Black and brilliant. Is very difficult. I forgot exactly how poetic, like
the price you pay. It's the price he talks about, the price he pays for being Black and brilliant.
That's right.
It's Andre Holland's character. Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. P. Sam, Andre Holland's character. We know that. We feel that. As Black artists, we live that. But now people hearing this and listening to this in 2021 through this audible production, it will resonate in a different way. It does resonate in a unique and different and urgent way.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, you know, to think, I mean, there's nothing I could add to that, by the way, that would compare, but I'm going to add anyway that, you know, Dominique Morisot utilizing a sort of, you know, snapshot in history, right? It's so often in American theatrical culture that, you know, we forget that period plays are, yes, about the period that they are written about, but they are about the moment that the writer is writing, right? They are as much about Dominique Morisot's lived experience as it is about the lives of the characters, you know? And I think that also hearing this story again reminds us that playwrights are prescient, extraordinary artists who vibrate with the universe. And if we listen to them, they will tell us where it's at. They will tell us what we need to be listening to. And they will ultimately show us the way forward. That's what artists do. That's what they've always done. That's the power of brilliant artistry, you know, and this play was there, she was there, this group of artists has been there for a long time.
And you're so right. You often hear that artists reflect the times, but to project and to be prescient is a whole different thing. And I agree with you 100% on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Paradise Blue comes out on Audible toward the end of March. And I wonder if we could also now look ahead for both of you. What's coming up on your various plates? Mandy, first of all, what is the Williamstown Theater Festival for 2021 look like?
All plays starring Blair Underwood. It's an Blair Underwood season.
This is why I love her so much. I'm in.
You know, we are working to put together a season, and we are really hoping that our country gets healthy so that it will be safe to make theater again. And it will. We will figure it out. We will find a way forward. But we've got to make sure it's safe and right. So, you know, as all of that becomes clear, so too will our plans. But an all Blair Underwood season, by the way, would not be so bad.
You're amazing. When do we start?
And Blair, what's coming up for you? I, as I mentioned, yeah. You're nominated for a Tony Award, and the Tonys will happen at some point.
Who knows?
Theoretically, at some point. But congratulations, you know, on that. And what?
Thank you. Thank you.
What else is on your plate looking ahead?
Yeah, I'm dying to get back to the theater, but until that happens, I'm grateful that film and television has gotten back to work. You know, in line with all the COVID precautions and regulations and all of that. But I'm actually developing with a phenomenal production team, a reboot of L.A. Law, the show that kind of gave me my leg up many years ago. And it's in conjunction with the Bochco estate, Stephen Bochco, who created L.A. Law. Dana Bochco, his wife and son. Stephen has passed away about 2 years ago, unfortunately, but Jesse Bochco and Anthony Hemingway, but a tremendous production team. And I'm also executive producer on it. And we're developing it now with ABC. So I'm very excited about that. So we'll see what happens with it.
Very cool.
Yeah, thank you.
You've mentioned more than once, Blair, that you really are anxious to get back to theater and you always enjoy returning to theater. I wonder if we can end with just you telling us a little bit about what it is about theater that you find so nourishing and what it is that makes you so anxious to get back.
My God, it's the immediacy of the relationship and the journey of the emotions of the characters and storytelling in a way. It's the relationship between the artist on stage and the audience. And we're breathing the same air, and it's different every night. I love that. You know, I do love film and television. You know, the beauty of that is whatever work you do, it lasts forever. It's committed to film or tape or digital forever and ever. Amen. But in the theater, the beauty for me is to be able to recreate it and fine tune it and improve upon that work every night. But it really is, you know, that's why it is the actor's medium, because we have a chance every night to take a journey for an hour and a half to 2 hours from beginning to end that we never do in film and television. There's, you know, it's because there's no continuity. And that's what we do. That's what we love, to put on that skin of a particular character and live that life and live it for 2 hours. There's nothing else like it.
Yeah.
And live it and share it with the audience. There's nothing else like it.
Mm. Well, we look forward to having the chance to see you on stage in the all Blair Underwood season at the Williamstown Theater. All right. Thank you both. Thank you so much for joining me. It was great talking to you.
Oh, Gordon, I appreciate it. Thank you. Manny, this was fun.
So fun. We'll do it again.
We'll do it again. We'll take it on the road.
Thank you, Gordon.
Thank you.
That was actor Blair Underwood and Williamstown Theater Festival artistic director Mandy Greenfield. And their new project together, Paradise Blue, will be released on Audible March 25th. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. You can find past episodes or subscribe on Apple Podcasts and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is another great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Until then, find me on Twitter at @gcoxvariety. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
Thanks.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.